The Chris Perullo Show's coverage of Search Engine Strategy San Jose was brought to you by MSN Search. Find something today at search.msn.com.
Before you start listening to this interview, I want you to take a moment and check your inbox and tell me, how many spam messages did you get? 4, 40, 400, 4,000? You know, there are very few people out there fighting the good fight, and one of those people is Ann Mitchell. You can insert an echo effect in there, can't you, Jake?
Sure.
I figured it'll make it godlike. Okay, so Ann, you've been fighting spam for years now. Decades. Eons.
Seems like forever, Chris.
When did you start?
1998, officially.
Is that when the spam problem got unbearably just horrible?
That's when it got bad enough that the concept of an anti-spam movement came into being, yes.
A movement?
A movement.
Is that how it began?
That's how it began, with one person's fight against injustice for the inbox.
So was it a whole bunch of hippies sitting around barefoot and singing Kumbaya, saying we can make the world a better place?
Sort of. It was a couple of really hardcore geeks sitting around barefoot saying, not in my inbox, you don't.
Yeah, but has it really worked? Because here we are years later, and the spam problem seemed to have gotten worse, not better.
Well, you know, when people ask me, has it worked, and I most often hear that in the context of spam laws, I explain that it's very much like that old adage of the six blind people and the elephant. It really kind of depends which part you're feeling. To the average user, it actually has gotten better. To the average ISP, it's gotten much worse.
Really? I see it kind of as the opposite. It seems that my parents can only log on and they feel like their messages aren't getting through because they're getting less spam than they normally do. So when you say that it's better for the user, what do you mean?
Did you say your parents feel like their messages aren't getting through because they're getting less spam?
Yes.
Now that's an interesting issue because typically when a user sees less spam, they're happy. And so that's what I meant when I said that to the user, it seems to be getting better. Now, I understand, I understand what you're saying is because your parents aren't getting as much spam, they're wondering about the other messages that also aren't getting through.
Yes. Good problem to have?
It's unique.
Unique. So most people are thrilled when they get less messages.
They're thrilled when they get less spam. Now, I actually should say that, and it's probably, Chris, because they're your parents, that's a very savvy thing for them to worry about. The average end user is not aware of the problem of false positives, which is good mail that's not getting through.
So you originally started as in life, well, in your professional life.
As a baby.
As a baby. Well, not in your professional life, you weren't a baby, but in law. Mm-hmm. And you still carry that moniker proudly?
I do, and in fact, my first involvement on a professional level with the anti-spam movement was as in-house counsel for the original blacklist, the RBL.
Is that still alive?
It is indeed. Well, actually, it was MAPS, and then it became Kelkia, and they were just bought by Trend Micro, I think. So in that regard, it's still alive, but it's a shadow of its former self.
Seems almost like the antivirus industry, where you don't know if you can trust the providers who are helping protect you, allegedly, but then what's the Latin phrase? Who's watching the watchers?
That's right. Or as Dr. Seuss would say, the bee watchers are bee watching the bee watchers.
Oh, yes.
The hotch hotch bee watchers.
Yes. It's All the Places You Can Go, or what was
That's
the
right.
title of that book?
The Places You Can Go.
I purchased that for Ponzi when she was in the hospital recently.
Unless you don't know how lucky you are.
You don't know how lucky you are. Yes, thank you.
Because she has you.
Apparently, I'm not Susian enough for this whole conversation.
I read that book almost every day.
Jake is apparently well-versed in the whole Seuss thing.
We like the Lorax, actually.
Although I would call spammers dumb-diddy-dum-diddy-dum-dum-dum.
Not all of them. You might notice that Scott Richter, who just settled the Microsoft suit for $7 million, was able to settle a suit for $7 million.
Now, is that affordable in terms of spammer numbers?
Well, it's certainly affordable to him.
So he made that much money.
And more.
So do these people get kicked in the shins on a regular basis?
They even get whacked on a regular basis.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. What do you think about that whole story?
You talk about the guy in Russia? Mm-hmm. The last I heard, there was a newspaper account in Russia that indicated it was just, some would say, happy coincidence that he was the largest spammer in Russia. And it really had to do with bringing home two beautiful women from a bar who were the malls for the guy that kneecapped him.
Are you happy about that?
No.
You're not?
No, I don't think anyone deserves to die that kind of death, even if they are terrible spammers. Be strung up by their thumbs, maybe, but killing's a bit.
What, then, would you consider a maximum penalty if you were to offend someone on a massive level? And I'm not talking about vigilantes, you know, people who are sending out legitimate newsletters and content. I mean, talking about, like, massive, just, this is just wrong stuff.
Are you asking me what I consider to be a legitimate and appropriate punishment for a very bad hardcore spammer?
You are a lawyer, yes.
Please don't hold that against me. I would say, certainly, I would like to see harsher federal penalties like prison.
How many years?
Well, maybe a day for each piece of email they sent would be good.
Oh, so you're talking lifers.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And absolutely no internet access, which is the thing that is like purgatory for a spammer.
Yeah, but then they could go through the direct mail route, which was spam years before spam was spam.
Yeah, but then they have to pay for it, you see, because the problem with spam is the receiver pays, not the sender.
To a certain degree.
To a certain degree. It's a little bit like if you had to accept all those telemarketing calls, collect.
Now, what do you think about whitelisting versus blacklisting? Is it something, a tactic that people should be taking?
That's a really complicated question, and I know I'm sounding like a lawyer here, but it really depends on what you mean by whitelisting. Do I think the end user ought to make sure that they tell their email program, I always want email from my mom, unless they don't? Sure, I think that's a good idea. Do I think that having whitelisting service is a good idea? Sure, I'm involved with an organization that runs one that could arguably call it a whitelist. Do I think that the model should be moved to only accepting mail from whitelists? Absolutely not.
Then do you think that email is dead?
No, but I know some people whom I greatly admire who do.
Oh, really? Like who?
I don't want to name any names, Chris.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate that, Anne. So now you work with ISIP. This is a company, another company that you founded.
That's correct. I run ISIP, which stands for the Institute for Spam and Internet Public Policy.
Again, very attorney-ish.
Damn me with faint praise.
So what is the mission of this organization?
I liken the Institute to Switzerland. We are the neutral, and indeed the only neutral organization that regularly gets together the email sending and the email receiving communities. We do not have an agenda for either. We work with both, and we manage somehow to get them together, talking and working together and realizing that they really both want the same thing, which is primarily true. Legitimate email senders and big email receivers like ISPs and spam filters, they actually really both want the same thing, which is to not send and deliver email which is not wanted, but to deliver email which is wanted.
And you're a for-profit organization.
We are not non-for-profit.
Okay, I got to analyze that one. We are not for-profit. So legally speaking, what does that mean?
I wish you guys could see the face that Mr. Perillo just made. It was priceless. We operate much like a nonprofit organization. We have never filed for nonprofit status, in large part because we advise the public sector. So, for example, I was personally involved with helping Senator McCain's office author an amendment to CAN spam. And anytime you become a 501c3 nonprofit organization, you start getting looked at very carefully to see whether you're doing any lobbying or political activity. We didn't want to have to deal with that.
So you do lobbying?
We do political activity, to the extent that you can say consulting with legislators is political activity.
Just not in the lobby.
But not in the lobby, that's right. It's always in the back room, Chris.
I just have to make sure, you know, got to clarify that. Absolutely. In the library with a candlestick with Colonel Mustard.
I prefer Professor Plum.
Fair enough. I'm more of a white kind of guy. But so, have you in your life ever sent out a message that had gotten you accused of spamming someone?
Do you know, I can't remember being accused of spamming, but it would be very easy for me to be accused of spamming. And I think you'll understand that when I explain what I mean, which is this. people often receive email, which they instantly report as spam, because they don't remember asking for it. So it's very easy to be accused of being a spammer when, in fact, you are not a spammer.
Do you think the email publishing industry has still got legs?
More than you do.
You believe it more than I do?
Yes.
Yes,
why?
More than you have legs.
Right.
No.
Yes, well, I'm standing about 3 feet shorter than you at this point. But why do you think that is?
I don't believe email will ever be dead. Now, that said, I do believe that email as a large broadcast mechanism is definitely being given a run for its money by other forms of broadcast, such as RSS, of which I'm a great advocate. But I think that email as a commercial vehicle will always be around, just like the telephone will always be around, because too many people use it on a regular basis and are not going to abandon it.
And
I would also add that too many people want to receive it.
What about challenge response? That bad.
Challenge response is the bane of any commercial enterprise's existence. It's great for individuals who don't ever want to get email from anyone they don't know on a business level. It's great for really ticking off potential customers. It works, but it's not workable, if that makes sense.
So what's the anti-spam solution that you use personally?
Now, Chris, was that a play on words, anti-spam?
Well, I wasn't necessarily making that allusion, but sure, you could draw that.
Good. Can I also tell your listeners to go visit anti-spam?
Sure.
All right.
I think you just did.
Well, you know, but it's got to be spelled out. So everyone go to www.antispam, that's AUNTY-SPAM.com. And the anti-spam solution I use is actually a combination of Spam Assassin and then the local spam filter on my Mac.
Which one do you use there?
I actually use what's built in the Mail app.
Does a fair job, then?
It does a pretty decent job, I have to tell you. But that's because, of course, I have Spam Assassin running on my server first.
What usually slips through, if anything?
Brand newly minted spam that Spam Assassin has not yet been trained for, or my own Mail app. But even then, it ends up in my junk folder.
I've seen ads for Viagra, search engine optimization, you name it, I've seen it. What is the most prolific sphere of spam? Like, what is the most common topic that gets spammed?
You know, a lot of people would think it's porn spam, or they would think it's herbal Viagra. But
did you say corn spam?
That's right, corn spam. Mortgage spam, at least, used to be at the top. I honestly don't know this week what's at the top, but recently it was certainly mortgage spam.
Well, some would say that porn prefers it on top, but you know, whether or not it's mortgage this week, who's to say? And who does say?
I should tell you that right now you're very close to San Francisco, so often porn prefers to be bottom.
Oh, well, fair enough. So in this whole world of fighting this just nefarious, well, in my opinion, nefarious, and in many people's opinion, nefarious activity, it seems to have created quite a few millionaires. What, if anything, is going to stop this trend?
You know, it's really interesting you mention that. Now, wait, were you talking about the millionaires who were sending the spam or the millionaires who got the dot-com funding to stop the spam?
Well, let's say both.
Because that's kind of one of my hot buttons, which is that up until a few years ago, there wasn't even an anti-spam industry. There were some people sitting in garages running servers who had hobby blacklists that other people used. And suddenly, about 3 years ago, three companies kind of hit the ground running. One of them, you know, fair enough to say, being mine, but it just all at once, there was an anti-spam industry. And in the past 3 years, it's become just this huge industry with all this investment money. And it's just, it's going to collapse because it's just not sustainable. So
in what way?
Well, first of all, a lot of the companies aren't actually doing anything to help people. There's a lot of investment money. I don't know if you guys saw, well, I'm not going to besmirch anyone, but there was a company that just recently announced this novel new program. It's been in the news a lot. And the program is that they are going to take down websites that are spamvertised by basically DOSing them. And they got funding for that. And DOSing is illegal. So it's just the amount of stupid VC money out there just boggles my mind.
Now, speaking of DOSing, what do you think about Microsoft's whole Trusted Sender program?
That's not something at which I'm at liberty to comment.
Ooh, okay.
Well, I don't know why you wouldn't be liberty to comment, but I can draw my own conclusions, I suppose.
I was involved on some level with the organization, the group that dealt with looking at that at a time when it was first being introduced.
Who do you think would be easier to defend in court, Osama bin Laden or someone who spams?
You know, I think reasonable minds could differ about that.
Good answer. Good. I saw that dodge. Did you, Jake? We've got, a finite amount of space and a finite amount of time every day to go through the messages that come into our inbox. Is there really an all-out comprehensive solution that you see coming down the pike?
No, there isn't. And this is what my mantra that I tell people whenever I get the chance. The only way to deal with spam is with a three-prong approach. One is a legal attack. And we're working on that, and we're doing it. And we're seeing, for example, Microsoft and AOL and Earthlink really are actually making some good inroads there. That's not enough. It's necessary but not sufficient. The second prong is technology. Again, spam filters. They're getting really, really good. No one's going to be perfect, but they're really getting good, which is why I said from the end user perspective, unless like your parents, they're worrying about what other mail's not getting through, users are much more happy than they were a year ago because they're getting a lot less spam. But that also, technology is not sufficient, necessary but not sufficient. It's the third prong, which is so sadly lacking. It's the weak link in the chain, and it's the reason there will always be a spam problem. Can you guess what it is?
The internet.
The users. The end user. User education is that third prong, and until users understand their responsibility for maintaining their antivirus and anti-spyware software, for maintaining spam filters, and most importantly, Chris, until they stop buying things from spam and clicking on links in spam, there will always be a spam problem.
Much like telemarketers.
You got it.
Which is worse, direct mail, telemarketing, or spam?
Osama bin Laden.
You can't do that. You can't pull out an answer of three questions ago.
I'm a lawyer and a woman and a New Yorker. I can do whatever I want.
So does that mean you're going to sue me if I challenge that?
Nah.
I certainly appreciate it. So, Anne, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me on the show, Chris.
This interview brought to you by the all-new MSN Search. Find something today at search.msn.com. Visit thechrisparulloshow.com for more audio downloads. And remember to tune in every Thursday night for our live show.